So the present verse and purport create a challenge to modern mundane conceptions of the universe, although there's some slight openness to the possibility there might be some sort of amoebic life on other planets. But here we read that there are highly evolved beings on different planets, that they are able to travel from one planet to the other, that they have interaction with the residents of other planets, and that in fact there is a hierarchy within the universe, a hierarchy of planets and a hierarchy of personalities. So the descriptions here pose not only a challenge to empirical scientists, but they actually pose a challenge to the faith of some devotees, because we also have intelligence. We consider whether what we read and hear is true or not. And we also were trained in, you know, modern scientific methods and thoughts. Especially the last sentence. On this earth, however, we have not invented any machine that can go directly from one planet to another, although an unsuccessful attempt has been made to go directly to the moon. When man first supposedly went to the moon, Srila Prabhupada challenged the idea very strongly. Of course, the point is controversial in the sense that many people have different ideas on the subject. The Prabhupada Lilamrita describes that Srila Prabhupada was in England at the time of the moonshot, and that some of the devotees were so interested that Prabhupada see the demonstration that they had a television. They brought in a television, and it just so happened that the landing on the moon was going to coincide with Srila Prabhupada's massage. So Dhananjaya Prabhu was Srila Prabhupada's personal assistant, and he was giving Srila Prabhupada his massage during the telecast. And as he was massaging Srila Prabhupada, his attention kept going to the telecast. And Prabhupada kept having to correct him because he wasn't massaging properly. And so, you know, he'd be massaging, then he'd start looking at the television, and Prabhupada would say, "What's the matter? Don't you know how to massage properly?" So then, okay. And he'd start to massage again. And he'd start to watch the telecast. And then Prabhupada actually like took his hand and put his hand on his body and said, this is how you massage. So it was quite an event. Meanwhile, Srila Prabhupada had another servant with him named Purushottama. And Purushottama was, he was sort of inclined to believe what the media were saying. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada kept making fun of the moonshot and making fun of Purushottama. So one time, when Srila Prabhupada was in his room, Mother Malati was cooking in the kitchen, and somehow something went wrong in the kitchen, and there was a big explosion, and you know, everyone in the whole house was startled because of the noise. So Mother Malati came into Srila Prabhupada's room, and she was all covered in with black soot. And Purushottama heard the sound of the blast, and he was concerned. He, you know, didn't know if Prabhupada was all right, so he came running in. And there was Prabhupada peacefully sitting on his asan, and Mother Malati covered with black all over. And, you know, he came running in and he said, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, what happened? And then Prabhupada pointed to Mother Malati and said, she has just returned from the moon. So, you know, everyone had a good laugh, except Purushottama. He didn't think it so funny. And and eventually Purushottama left. You know, it was too much for him. He, of course, he left in a very nice way, and Prabhupada actually loaned him the money to move on, and he repaid Srila Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada was aware that disciples would have difficulty with some of his statements, with some of the statements of the Bhagavatam. In fact, the fifth canto further on describes the structure of the universe, different planets and the earth in ways that sound very different from what we learn in science textbooks and classrooms. And Srila Prabhupada said that, predicted that some of his disciples would leave when the fifth canto comes out because they won't be able to accept what's written there. So Srila Prabhupada was aware of the fact that some of the statements of the scripture and some of his statements were so different from the way we're accustomed to thinking, that even his own disciples would not be able to digest the ideas, and they would leave. But Srila Prabhupada himself was completely faithful to the scriptures. I mean, when he presented the scriptures, he supported them with his own knowledge and experience. And, you know, and he would always sort of, you know, support and defend the Vedic view. Now, regarding the moonshot, our godbrother Tejas Prabhu was in India at the time. He was actually in the Peace Corps. And he said that when the news was broadcast, at least the villagers where he was, among whom he was working, they didn't accept it. They immediately said, oh, they can't go to the moon. You know, the moon is a heavenly planet. They just can't take a machine and go to the moon. So they didn't believe it. And I even heard that at the initial stage, the Russian government or the Russian press denied that the moonshot had actually taken place or been successfully executed. And but then later they went along with it because although there was the Cold War and rivalry between the United States and Russia, you know, on the highest level, the demons that are in power want to keep the people faithful to them. And if one, so like if the people lose faith in one leader, in a way, it's a precedent that may cause people to lose faith in other leaders. So, although they do compete on a certain level, but on another level, they all have the same interest, which is to subdue and exploit the people. So then, you know, they went along with it, and, you know, they thought it's good if the people believe that the government programs are successful, because then the people will give more taxes and be more submissive. Even during Srila Prabhupada's time, there were disciples that questioned not only issues about the universe, but even some of the statements about Krishna Lila. Like there are statements in the Bhagavatam about how many cows Nanda Maharaj had. I forget the figure. When I read it, I was very proud that Nanda Maharaj was so opulent. He could give, you know, whatever it was, 15,000 cows in charity every day. But some of the disciples, you know, they questioned the factualness of the descriptions. You know, fantastic figures about how many people lived in Dwarka, you know, and so many things. And Srila Prabhupada replied, well, that's just the way the Puranas are. The Puranas are filled with such descriptions. And, you know, and if you can't accept them, well, that's just the way they are, and we can't do anything about it, you know. In other words, he was saying, I can't change it for your sake. That's just the way they are. And, you know, and that's the best I can do. I can just present it as it is. And that's the best I can do. And if you're not satisfied, I'm sorry, but that's just the best that I can do. And of course, sometimes devotees distinguish between statements that relate to the physical universe and statements that relate to the spiritual process of Krishna consciousness and the spiritual world. And they say that the subjects that deal with the physical universe may be considered from the empirical point of view, but the topics that relate to the spiritual world, we just accept as they are. Now, the problem is an old one. The conflict between modern, rational, scientific views and the Vedic statements is an old one. And it came up in the 19th century when, you know, rational, modern, scientific views from Europe and, I guess, America were coming to India. And the Bengali intellectuals were, you know, they were considering all the new ideas. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wanted to appeal to the intellectuals, and if he would have taken a very dogmatic view of the Vedas and completely dismissed the view of, you know, the rationalists and the scientists, the intellectuals in Bengal would have rejected him. They would have thought he was just a sentimentalist or a fanatic. So, especially in the introduction to Sri Krishna's Sanghita, he explains, you know, the modern so-called rational, scientific, critical view of the Bhagavatam, what they say. And basically, he addresses his readers and he says that he wants the faithful to read the book, but he also wants the intellectuals to read the book. And he knew the intellectuals would like the introduction, but he was afraid that they might not read the rest of the book because it was stories of Krishna Leela. And he also was concerned that the faithful might reject the book because of the introduction. They wouldn't like to hear all these, you know, so-called rational explanations of the Bhagavatam. So, you know, he was in a difficult position because he didn't want to alienate the intellectuals or the faithful. And so he explained that there are different categories of seekers. Some are faithful already, but their faith is not really mature. And they only like to hear things that encourage their faith, which is common in almost every tradition. You know, the neophytes, they conceive of, you know, religion as they know it in their tradition. And they like the scriptures of their tradition and the language of their tradition and the dress of their tradition and the ritual symbols of their tradition. And they don't feel comfortable with anything else. They don't feel comfortable, or they may, you know, if they're really fanatical, of course Hinduism isn't fanatical like that, but, you know, if they're really fanatical, they'll think you're of the devil. Like many times on Sankirtan in Boston, people would come up and, oh, you're of the devil. Or people would be buying books. You know, we'd be in the middle of a sale or, you know, an interaction. And someone would say, oh, don't buy that. These people are of the devil. You know, you go to hell. So that's there. That's there. So those whose faith is soft, you know, they're not open to other ideas. They're not able to consider the unity of ideas between different traditions. So they're called Komala Shraddhis, people whose faith is soft. And then the other class of seeker that Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions are the intellectuals. He calls them Madhyams there. They have questions. You know, they want answers to their questions. They don't just want pat answers based on the tradition. Like many of us, when we came to Srila Prabhupada in the 60s and 70s, you know, we had a lot of questions. We were seeking. We had a lot of questions. We wanted answers. We didn't want like a Bible thumper or, you know, a Gita thumper to say, well, you know, it says here and, you know. And because of his realization, because of his great knowledge and realization, he was able to satisfy most of us. And he said that, I don't want you to accept Krishna consciousness blindly. You know, I want you to consider it with your intelligence, and then when you're convinced, you accept it. But of course, it is true that one's intelligence can only go so far, because the intelligence is material. So it can only approach the level of Brahman, impersonal Brahman. The intelligence cannot know of the transcendental form of the Lord or the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. That knowledge can come only by submissive oral reception. But Srila Prabhupada said you can take the intelligence as far as it will carry you. Which is just to that point, that there is a spiritual source of everything, or there's a spiritual background to everything. And then you have to surrender, to go beyond the idea that there's a spiritual source or background to everything. You have to surrender and hear from authorities. So that's like the process of Sankhya, the analysis of the world. The material scientists do something comparable to Sankhya. They analyze the material world, the elements of the material world. And Srila Prabhupada explains that that is one approach, that by analyzing a plant, you can conclude that there's a root. That's sort of like the Sankhya process. And the devotional process is you water the plant, you water the root of the plant. You can't see the root, but you water the root of the plant, and you see how the plant grows when it's watered, and then you conclude that there are roots under the plant. But they both come to the same conclusion, to the point that there is a spiritual root to existence. But devotional service goes beyond the conclusion that there's a root to the point that we water the root. We serve the origin of all that be, which is Krishna. So, although our intelligence can take us to a certain point, at a certain point, we just have to surrender. And in Indore, one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Revati Nandan Das, he asked Srila Prabhupada that in some places we read that all the planetary systems are contained within the stem of the navel of the lotus that sprouts from the navel of Lord Vishnu. And in other places we read that Lord Brahma sits on top of the lotus flower and creates the planets, and the planets are all around him outside the lotus. So how do we reconcile the two? And, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, you know, these things are inconceivable. You cannot understand them with your teeny brain. So our business is to love Krishna. So ultimately we do come to that point that the descriptions are there. The persons who give the descriptions are on a different level of consciousness than we are. And they're trying to explain what they know from their point of view and make it accessible to us who are seeing things from our point of view. But we may not be able to grasp them because they're inconceivable. But when it comes to the process of Krishna consciousness, that's something that is accessible to all of us. And we can experience for ourselves. I mean, even if one is not ready to accept the descriptions about the universe, you know, one can still accept the process of Krishna consciousness and get the result. And, you know, there were cases where disciples, there's one case in particular, Krishna Das, who had done a lot of service for Srila Prabhupada, and then he drifted away. And then he was coming back again, but he was still troubled by some of these statements about the universe. Whatever it was. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada said that there are people that give allegorical explanations of the parts of the Bhagavatam that deal with the universe. And, you know, Prabhupada didn't say that he accepted them, but he said that there are people who give allegorical interpretations. But what Prabhupada did say is that, you know, the main thing is to be Krishna conscious. And it's not worth missing the chance to be Krishna conscious over, you know, the details or controversies about, you know, the structure of the universe or the history of the universe. So, you know, Prabhupada didn't, he didn't think it was a valid reason for someone to give up the process of Krishna consciousness just because he didn't accept as literal truth, you know, what the Bhagavatam said about the universe. Nor did Prabhupada say that, you know, he was disqualified or offensive or anything. He just said, well, all right, well then, let's leave that aside. There are some people do give allegorical interpretations. I'm not insisting that you have to accept it as literal truth, but, you know, let's not miss the main point, the real point, which is Krishna consciousness. So that is the real point. And that comes from surrender, that realization of Krishna consciousness comes from surrender, from basically surrender to the spiritual master, to service to the spiritual master. And from that, one gets transcendental realization, as was the case with Priyavrata, because he surrendered to Narada Muni, a spiritual master, and followed spiritual advancement. Therefore, it said, yasya deve para bhaktir, yata deve tata guru, tasyaite katita hyartha, prakashante mahatmanaha. That one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and in the scriptures and the Vedas, all the imports of the Vedas are revealed to him. And Srila Prabhupada applied the same principle to the other famous verse from the Bhagavatam, Nasta Preyeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, that by serving the pure devotee or by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, all that is inauspicious in the heart becomes destroyed almost to nil, and transcendental loving service to the Lord is established as an irrevocable fact. So there was a time in India when, well, a lot of the time in India in the early days, we really worked hard. I mean, Srila Prabhupada really worked us hard. And, you know, we were lucky if we were able to chant our rounds. And there was almost no question of reading Prabhupada's books then. And so it was sort of bothering me. You know, I was, a relatively young devotee, maybe 2 years. And I don't know, it was like bothering me that I wasn't reading. I thought I should be reading. We're supposed to read. So Srila Prabhupada quoted the verse, you know, Nasta Preshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, and said that by, you know, serving the person Bhagavat or reading the book Bhagavat, one gets the same result. And that by serving the person Bhagavat, all the truths of the book Bhagavat will be revealed even if you never read the book. So, and he was encouraging us to be surrendered to his will, to his service, and not to worry about our spiritual advancement or realization independently. And I think the devotees who did surrender to Srila Prabhupada's service did make advancement by his mercy. So I'm thinking of one time when we were in Juhu. We were actually staying with Srila Prabhupada in a house that belonged to Mr. Sethi. The house was still not completely finished. It was a new house that he was building in the Juhu scheme, which he named Vrindavan. And because of all the intrigues about the Juhu land and the complications in getting the land transferred to the name of ISKCON, we weren't able to build on the property. So we didn't really have any proper place for Srila Prabhupada, so we'd have to arrange for him to stay in different people's homes. So Mr. Sethi's house was almost finished. It was livable. I mean, there was still some work to be done, but it was livable. So he said that Srila Prabhupada and some disciples could stay there. So at the time we had a life member who was also a devotee, a sort of devotee and friend named Sushil Asnani. So he was a lawyer. Actually, I think Mike Tahili was the one who met him, and he was like very enthusiastic when she met him, and she was enthusiastic and told us about him, and he actually was very enthusiastic, and he was willing to help us as a lawyer. So he was dealing with some of the legal aspects of the affair with Nair and the land, and Prabhupada just really wanted to know, like, what had happened. So at 6 in the morning, he told Tamal Krishna Goswami, you know, what's the news from Asnani? And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, well, he hadn't heard anything. So Prabhupada said, well, go and phone him. Now? Yes, right now. And we didn't have a telephone in that house. And in fact, it wasn't that easy to get telephones in India then. In fact, before we even came to India, Srila Prabhupada was saying how the Indian politicians are the most corrupt in the world, and that just to get a telephone you have to pay a 10,000 rupee bribe. So anyway, we didn't have a telephone, and so Tamal Krishna Goswami had to sort of go in the neighborhood at 6 in the morning and try to find some householder that would let him use the phone. So he did it, and he phoned, and Mrs. Asnani answered the phone, and Goswami Maharaj said, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, I'd like to speak to Mr. Asnani. Srila Prabhupada wants me to get some information. So she said, just a second. And a few moments later, she returned and said that Mr. Asnani is doing his puja, and he would like you to phone back in an hour. So, you know, I wasn't there. I was in the house with Srila Prabhupada, but I was there when Goswami Maharaj returned. And, you know, he was a bit angry. And he told Srila Prabhupada, you know, like, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, the pure devotee of the Lord, wants Mr. Asnani to come to the phone and give him some information. And Mr. Asnani thinks it's more important to do his puja, like, you know, what a fool. You know, he doesn't get it. But Srila Prabhupada sort of moderated Goswami Maharaj's mood, and he said, no, actually it's good. You know, for someone on his level, it's good to be very regulated and very strict, you know. So, you know, it may be that not everyone can serve in that way of, you know, being ready to do anything for Srila Prabhupada at any time of day or night. And it may also be that that some devotees in the name of service have gone too far, and they've neglected being regulated, they've neglected chanting their rounds. Of course, chanting the rounds was always mandatory. I mean, Srila Prabhupada said if you're too busy, because we really were busy, that if you're too busy, you know, you can even miss the class. He didn't like it, but he said if you're too busy, you can even miss the class. But he never gave us permission not to chant our rounds. The only concession was if we miss, we can make them up. But he didn't compromise on the rounds. But the other parts of the morning program, if there really was essential service to be done, then, you know, he said it's okay. So, I mean, yeah, some devotees could go too far and neglect chanting, which wasn't what Prabhupada said, but that's what I mean by too far. They'd neglect chanting and they'd have spiritual difficulties. But otherwise, you know, I at least from my experience and the experience of other devotees, the ones that really did, you know, serve Srila Prabhupada with heart and soul without personal consideration, like the Bhagavad Gita purport says, that you know, that one who serves the spiritual master without reservation, he can, you know, by the blessings of the spiritual master, he can make spiritual advancement even without following all the rules and regulations. Or following the rules and regulations will be easier for one who serves the spiritual master without reservation. But that, you know, that has always been the distinctive feature of Srila Prabhupada's mood, you know, service to the spiritual master. That's how he presented himself, you know, as the servant of his spiritual master, and that's how he trained us and engaged us. And that really is the secret of success, as Prabhupada said. That's the secret of success. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prajapati Prabhu.
I'm asking this on behalf of others as well, but the question is, once the spiritual master leaves this world, then where does one look to for understanding how one is to behave or act or guidance?
Well, the general answer is, you know, Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, Vakya. There are three authorities, Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. So now you're saying that the Guru has left.
So your Guru, our Guru, should have also left.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So, of course, we do have the instructions that he gave us when he was present. And then, but like for new guidance, of course the scriptures are there, but there's so many things in the scriptures, and how do you know which instructions apply? And then there's sadhus. Sadhus are shiksha gurus. They can help us. And then there's the chaita guru, the guru in the heart. And if we're sincere enough and surrendered enough, then, you know, the Lord in the heart or the Guru in the heart will also give dictation. But you have to be qualified. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. If we're constantly engaged in service with affection, then, you know, the Lord in the heart or the Guru in the heart will give direction. And then sometimes we hear that, you know, one gets inspiration from within the heart, but then one confirms it from without. So, yeah, sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha. Of course, there's also a quality to sadhu sangha, and the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu says, svajati asheye snigde sadhu sangha svatovare, that one should associate with devotees that are in this, well, the verse says that one should associate with devotees who are in the same camp, you could say. Same camp. In our case, it would probably be, you know, Prabhupada's followers, who are affectionate, like, and who are more advanced than oneself. So those are, so that's what we would look for. That's what we.